Broad Designs is about me talking to women in the design industry. I am doing a PhD on that area, researching the inequality and trying to increase the diversity in the discourse and in the way we speak about design. And Melbourne's design community is huge and rich in stories, so I'm just trying to have chat about those stories on air.
Okay, well, it's over to you for your segment.
Fantastic. Thanks, guys. So this is Jane Connery on Joy 94.9, and this is Broad Designs on Sunday Arts Magazines, where I talk to women in design and make sure we hear their voices loud and proud. Today, my guest is Stephanie Andrews, a tech guru who has worked at Pixar in the US. She's been an entrepreneur, founding 3D companies for Second Life, has exhibited digital artworks and lighting around the world, and is now neck deep researching new technologies in the virtual reality space. Born in the States, I'm pretty sure, she has been a design educator there and here and is now the creative director at Liminal Virtual Reality in Melbourne. Stephanie, welcome to Broad Designs.
Hello, thank you, Jane.
It's so great to have you here. I know it was a bit of an effort. You're not feeling too well, but it's going to be great. And your CV certainly is impressive. I'm interested in knowing when, where and how this all began, your journey in tech.
Well, I had a father who was actually an engineer at Boeing, and he was one of the types that was bringing computers, you know, home to have in the house pretty early on. And I actually kind of grew up in high school using the old school modems to yes. dial into bulletin boards and have conversations with people back in the day. So that's probably the earliest kind of roots of getting into the computer side of things.
Nice. I had a dad who worked in aircrafts as well. Find out more we have in common. And your work is a mix of extremes, the highly personalised with the democratic counterculture mixed with big corporate bods and educational institutions. I want to kind of hear about both sides of this story. Maybe start with Pixar. Everyone wants to hear about working on The Bug's Life and Toy Story 2.
That's right. I've decided that if there's going to be one thing on my gravestone, it's going to say
that.
Totes worked at Pixar. I have a little post-it note above my desk, actually. Has a picture of that. So yes, out of undergraduate, I actually was very fortunate and was able to go work at Pixar in A Bug's Life and Toy Story 2. And that was a super exciting time, not only for Pixar, but just the industry in general, because Toy Story had come out. But, you know, there was a big question hanging around in the air. Is this a sustainable model for the movie industry? Can, you know, can Pixar keep doing it? And so we really had to prove that with A Bug's Life and then Toy Story 2.
Nice, nice. I was watching Walt Disney's documentary the other day. He had that same problem, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to make animation a sustainable
yeah.
business model.
Yeah.
And then there's Burning Man, an inclusive communal event deep in the Nevada desert. You worked on lots, I've just found out there. Tell us some more stories about that.
Yeah, I started going to Burning Man in 97, mm-hmm. which is... quite a long time ago now. I've actually been to the burn in Nevada 11 times. And I think every year since 97, I've been to a burn, at least one burn somewhere. And because there's all these regional
yes.
events.
Was there one just in Tassie, I think? At Dark Mofo, I think.
Really?
I could be making that
up. I don't know about that one. There's one in New Zealand, and there's also there's a couple now in Australia, actually. The one that I've been involved with here is called Burning Seed, which is in October. And I first went in 97, but then in 98, I actually did one of the 12 major projects that were out on what they called the Wheel of Time in the main area of Burning Man. And got a grant to do that. It was called the Hall of Possible Selves, and it was an installation, lighting installation piece out there that was kind of on the way out to go to the big Burning Man effigy. So that was really exciting and pretty much got me hooked, as you can tell from that point on. So I've done all sorts of things. I've been helped organize theme camps. I've built art projects. I've worked on effigies. I've done neon installations for things.
Nice.
Lots of stuff.
Nice. And so now it's virtual reality. It's kind of where your career is going. It's been around a while, but you're at the forefront of pushing what it can do creatively as well as in commercial applications. And you're doing a PhD, like me,
with
PhD buddies. So explain the exciting breakthroughs you're making through your research. It's kind of a virtual reality surrealism, right?
Yeah, there's for the PhD that I'm working on, I'm really interested in exploring what's possible, basically putting the virtual back in virtual reality, rather than putting the real back in virtual reality, which is what a lot of people kind of try to do. I'm really interested in what can VR give us that and show us that is impossible to see or experience in any other medium out there. And so I'm working on these spaces where it's like multiple pocket universes exist in the same VR experience at the same time for my PhD research.
So what does it feel like? I'm in the space and you explained to me once you created a hole. Yeah. Draw that picture for everyone like you drew it for me.
Yeah. So it's as if you're in, one world in VR and you look around and you can actually see lenses and portals into multiple different spaces at the same time. So it's almost like a fractured cubist kind of interpretation of perceptual space in VR. It's very unusual, and it's one of those things where I have to say to people, trust me, you can't really see the whole thing until you're in there in VR. And once you see it, you're going to go, oh. And they do. People go, oh.
Yeah. Hard to do on radio, but I have to go.
Even harder than with a PowerPoint slide, which I'm usually faced with.
And what about the kind of role as a creative director, combining neuroscience and design principles at Liminal?
Yes.
What does that look like?
So that's the other way in which I'm involved with virtual reality now. We're developing experiences for positive psychological outcomes that are based on VR. VR has the potential to have a lot of influence over people's emotional and cognitive states because it's such a powerful immersive tool. And so we're taking our expertise in development, and we have neuroscientists and psychologists on the team as well, and we're using all of those tools to really be able to lift people's moods or help them focus or various other kinds of things through experiences.
And is that creating new research? Is that creating new knowledge? Or is that kind of bringing what's already known into that space?
It's a combination of both. Mm. We do analytics on our experiences to see how people are reacting. And we are certainly looking at all of the research that's already out there from a multitude of fields, integrating that and making it into actionable research for development for VR developers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And users are getting that experience from it?
We've had some very powerful results in our latest Calm experience, where we've gotten a huge change from people coming in nervous and, you know, kind of anxiety ridden, coming out the other side feeling calm and staying calm for a good, 30 minutes or 45 minutes or so after, with longer term results. So
again, something I'm going to have to come and try.
Yeah, yeah.
Hi, this is Jane Connery on Joy 94.9 on Broad Designs on Sunday Arts Magazine, and I'm talking to Stephanie Andrews about her incredible career in all things tech and now virtual reality. But we're going back to that epitaph. Pixar, it does. It seems so glamorous sitting here in Melbourne, knowing that sort of work that you've done. Can you give us more insights into what you did there?
Yeah, so I was what was called a technical director, which is basically someone who works on the modeling of props, the layout of scenes, the camera moves in the scenes, and my particular specialty was lighting and illumination and texturing of the environments. So after, the models are built and everything like that, and they're animated by the animators, they come to me and literally, I make them visible and help bring the story alive through the lighting techniques.
And what were the models made of? Were they 3D printing back then? No.
No. Well, no, although there was a lot of work. So it's all digital. They're polygon meshes.
Okay.
Three 3D models like you'd think of today. But of course, the tech was more primitive at that point, and we couldn't visualize them on screen nearly as well as you can these days. It was just wireframes, and you would hit the go button and come check your renders a day later and see if, you know, everything worked. But Pixar did use a type, and I think still does use a type of modeling worker that they'd actually hire sculptors to model the characters in clay, and then digitize those clay models as a starting point. So you don't see that in a lot of cases, but it worked really well for Pixar to use that natural ability that sculptors had developed.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
They just have that sense of the three-dimensional space, inner space, don't they? And they can get... I was in the States a couple of years ago and saw some animation. I can't remember what movie it was, but they had 3D modeled like 80 different mouths for a character, and they were clipping them on. And
I wonder if it was Leica. Maybe there's a studio in Oregon that does really interesting work combining, and they do actually use 3D printing. They use quite a lot of different techniques in their animation. So it's stop motion, 3D printing, CG. They combine them all together and do some really interesting things with them.
And what's the industry for this like in Australia right now? Have you got sort of experience with that?
Yeah, there's definitely some you know, major players and well-known studios. There's Animal Logic and Allura and some others out there who are doing, you know, work in the visual effects and animation industries. But we sometimes tend to have a little bit of a talent drain in Australia. We train a lot of people, and but then a certain amount of them decide to work overseas. Then again, a lot of times Australia is able to import people as well sometimes.
Yes. So it's sort of a contract basis type job, isn't
right.
it? The
that's
movie's
right.
in, you're working, the movie's finished, it's over.
Yeah.
I went into Allura between movies maybe 18 months ago. Mm. Huge spaces, huge computers with huge potential for, you know, getting all that stuff done, and it was empty.
No one.
You could shot a cannon through it.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of studios, you know, work with a lot of the employees on a contract basis. Mm-hmm. Not, there's usually some, you know, core people who will stay the whole time, and it depends studio to studio. Pixar is actually one that keeps a lot of people on permanent, more so than a lot of places, I would say. But they kind of are in control of their own production schedule as well, so that helps a lot with that problem.
Yes, yeah, that's very cool. And so your fine art practice, this is what I love about you, Stephanie. Your work is everywhere. Your work does everything. Do you still do a bit of that sort of fine art, or is it still big collaborations that when you're going to do it, you're going to do it big?
No, actually, I do. I go to, you know, I do life drawing classes regularly. I try to keep up a drawing practice at least somewhat, and photography practice. And really, my PhD work I consider to be, it's kind of an independent experimental arts project at the same time as being a PhD. I have a really odd kind of career in that sense, because I've kind of got this Venn diagram where there's like three points that meet in a very tiny little spot in the middle, and so sometimes it's very difficult to get these three to talk to each other between commercial, like kind of really out there experimental art and academic.
Yeah,
you know, research and curriculum.
But I think, you know, there's always that conversation, there's not enough women in tech, and I think maybe that's the secret that a lot of women don't understand, that you can cross all these things over.
Yeah, like, you can. You just have to convince people it's fine.
Which we're good at as women, isn't it?
I mean, it you know, it's actually a real asset to work in different genres and from different perspectives, because you actually do think about things in a different way. You don't get locked down a particular tunnel of thought.
Yeah.
So.
That peripheral vision is always open to that new idea and that new skill or that new technology that can bring something to it.
Yeah, and you get to collaborate with, you know, meet interesting people across lots of different domains like yourself.
Yeah, well, we went through teaching, which is awesome. Your art practice is great. I saw, I think it was on your Twitter feed, you're off on a sketch group at one stage. Are you still doing that?
Yeah, occasionally. I sometimes like to hang out with the urban sketching.
Yes, and they're group. Global, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because when I went to New York only a few weeks ago, I love keep mentioning that to everybody. I found them online and I joined a Sketch the Ramble group at... It's Central Park and met all these
that
locals.
Would have been fun.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
It got rained out in about 20 minutes, but I got 20 minutes of fun.
I actually got started doing that kind of thing at through Pixar, because there was actually a person at Pixar who started this group called Sketch Crawl, which was kind of the precursor to, in some ways, to the urban sketching group, at least. That's how I think. I think it went that way.
Yeah.
And I did several sketch crawls before I kind of ran into Urban Sketchers. But Urban Sketchers, I think, has gotten quite a bit bigger now.
So many designers can get stuck in that sort of pixelated world, can't they? Just to get your hands moving in the craft of art and design is a huge benefit.
Absolutely.
To all sorts of work. Mm. And so, I mean, we've gone back to Pixar. We have to go back to Burning Man. What's I think there's an inner hippie inside you that we need to explore.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. I don't know what you're talking about.
Really? What's it like just being there? Do you sleep ever?
Yes, though it's hard to say when you'll actually end up sleeping. One of my absolute favorite things to do is to bring new people to Burning Man who haven't been before, and to basically, like, you know, give them the basics that they need. You know, you have to carry your own water, all of this stuff, you know, get them kind of into it, get them there, and then just, like, send them off and then see what they come back dressed like in two days later, you know, and see like, hear the stories of what's happened to them in 2 days, and, you know.
Always for the better, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, absolutely. For sure. But it's a really... I think the thing that is so different about Burning Man to any other kind of festival or experience I've had, there's two things. One is you're really meant to be a participant. It's not there for you. It's not made for you. There's not... I mean, everyone is making things, but it's all the people who are there. And so there's no... You know, there's no commerce, there's no big acts that you're paying a ticket to see. There might be big acts there, but they came on their own, and they're doing it of their own, like, volition, right?
Yes.
And they might not even be under their normal name.
So you don't know till you arrive, really.
No, I mean, you might, but, you know, it's all based on this participatory culture and kind of this extreme culture, so you get a totally different experience than we'd get anywhere else.
Yeah, I have to try it. Well, we have to find out where they are happening around Australia. So that's amazing to hear about how all these three parts of your Venn diagram are overlapping. Thank you so much for coming in today, Stephanie, and spending your afternoon here. You're always at the edge of where technology can go next. It does blow my mind, and we're so lucky to have you in Melbourne. I think.
Thank you for the invitation, and thanks to Joy as well.
Great. And thank you, David and Neil, for sharing your show with me. I'm Jane Connery, and you're listening to Broad Designs on the Sunday Arts Magazine on Joy 94.9.